Hello and welcome to another My Tunes podcast taken from Mark Tiley in the morning.
Mark Tiley, the nation's station, Men's Radio.
Another week of My Tunes on Manx Radio, and have we got a guest for you? He's comfortable at the turntables himself. He can fix things electrical just by looking at them. And he's been in charge of our Isle of Man. And he's been a contributor to our world of politics for a great many years. Tony Brown, OBE, welcome to My Tunes.
Yes, hi, Mark. Great to be here.
Well, thank you for coming along. I tell you, you could have done anything, really. You could have, you know, your whole career could have gone in any direction because your love of music, you know about all things electrical. You obviously had your shop as well. But you ended up being right at the heart of Manx politics. How did that happen?
Well, the reason I entered into politics was actually mainly came to head because I had a motorcycle accident in 1976, and I had such a reaction from the community. And then I was convalescing, and then the local authority elections came up, and people had said to me, because I'd been involved in youth work and involved supporting different clubs, and I'd been involved in the what was called the 7:30 disco, which was a voluntary club. People kept on to me and saying, why don't you go into the commissioners? Why don't you go in the commissioners? And initially, I felt too young. I was only 21. 1976, I was 26. I'd had this accident. I had such a reaction from people. And as I say, I was convalescing, talking to friends while I was convalescing after the accident. And nominations came out. Somebody got a nomination form and said, come on, sign here, it's time you were in there. And that's basically how it happened. And the rest, of course, politically, is history.
We're going to talk a lot about that political history over this week. But into the world of as an MHK, what, 81?
1981, I was first elected, yeah.
And
then I retired in 2011.
It's been a tremendous contribution. We're going to talk a lot about your role as Chief Minister later in the week. But you mentioned the disco days. You were very happy behind those decks, weren't you?
Oh, it was a fantastic time in my life. From when I was 19 until I was about 22, basically, was the 7:30 disco. And I was called Hovis. With a name like Brown, what else could you be? And then, of course, from there, when the disco folded, because it was a voluntary thing, it only has a lifespan of so long before people move on and so on, I carried on doing discos for functions and events, and I carried that through basically until I joined the commissioners in 1976. And I still do the odd one, a very odd one these days, but I generally play 60s, 70s, 80s music. Do it for the Pensioners Club in Castletown or different events like New Year's Eve dance that we have. And I'm part of what that is, really, so it helps out.
I do think I've seen you on the decks in the Morton Hall, sir.
Yeah, that's where we hold our New Year's Eve dance. And, we've done different fundraisers for the club to help raise funds. We've had ABBA nights, we've had rock and roll nights and different things. So we don't hold them very often, to be honest, because it's limited numbers. But I love music. I've always loved music. I can't sing, but I sing, if you know what that means.
Yes, I
can't,
do.
I can't even sing in the bath, otherwise the water will pour out. But, I mean, no, I just love music. And it's not just pop music. I mean, I like some classical music. It's basic, really, from my point of view. If it sounds good and I enjoy it, I like it.
Are you still on the vinyl, or are you now you've had to give all the vinyl up?
No, I've still got vinyls, but they're very rare I play them. I can always remember with my children when they were young, I got a record out to play, and they said, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and so I explained, this is a record, and this is what they do. But no, I'm like everybody else. I use an iPod, I use iTunes, I use CDs. I predominantly use CDs, to be honest, because they're convenient. But in odd time, I'll play some of my LPs. They're mainly LPs I've got. From most time from the 70s, Beatles, Moody Blues, they're the ones that were the main ones of my time that I liked very much, especially the Moody Blues.
If you want to book him, you're going to have to go through his agent. He doesn't do lots of gigs, but they're very special when he does. Sir, let's have your first piece of music. There's a bit of history behind this one.
Well, it is, yes. Jungle Fever is a record that was done by the Tornadoes, and it should have been, in my view, released as a single in its own right, but it was the B-side of Telstar. Lots of people know Telstar, but they don't necessarily know Jungle Fever. And Jungle Fever was my theme tune when I was DJ at the 7:30 disco. And I just think it's a fantastic piece of music done by the Tornadoes. And I hope people enjoy it, because some will have heard it, but an awful lot might not have ever heard it. And it really is quite a good tune.
Day two of My Tunes with my guest this week, Tony Brown, OBE. Tony, we talked a lot about getting behind the decks yesterday, and he is still available, boys and girls. Get your booking, get your bookings in early. But I want to talk about today specifically about your time as Chief Minister, 2006 to 2011. And initially, you weren't standing. As far as I can remember, it was Steve Roden, John Shimmin, David Cannon.
That's right, yeah.
And none of them got elected?
No.
And then next round, you're in?
Yeah. Well, basically, I mean, I was Speaker, or I had been Speaker, because you ceased to be Speaker when the House had dissolved. So I'd been Speaker for the 5 years earlier. I'd been re-elected as Speaker unanimously in the Keys, straight after the general election, which is the first thing the House does, after swearing in. And then when the Tynwald didn't elect either of the people involved that you mentioned to be Chief Minister, I, of course, went back to my office, and I then subsequently had a lot of people popping in saying, will you stand for Chief Minister? And it was a very difficult decision, because I really enjoyed being Speaker. I enjoy the legislature. I enjoy standing orders. I'd spent my time as Speaker modernising standing orders. I'd been involved in the leading the refurbishment and redevelopment of what is now the legislative buildings, and making it very much our own building, if you like, so it reflected our Manx style. And I was involved in Manx National Heritage as the vice chairman, so I was, you know, really involved in that, and I liked all that sort of work. And I also enjoyed helping and guiding members when you know, they were trying to deal with things. So the Speaker has a mixed role in the Isle of Man, because he's within the Keys impartial, but in Tynwald he has a voice like anybody else. But you know, you take that role in your own way, really, and I tended to take it to advise where I could. Didn't mean I didn't go on the attack and fight, and my record shows that. I did fight very hard when I felt it was the absolute right thing to do. So when I was asked would I go for Chief Minister, I wasn't reluctant, but I wasn't sure. It wasn't something I'd sought. I'd never been in my mind to be Chief Minister. I'd enjoyed 15 years before being Speaker, being a minister in different departments, and I really enjoyed that work. Great team of people to work with, both politically and officer-wise. So I gave it quite a lot of thought, really, and I really did think hard about it. And eventually I said, OK, you know, I will allow my name to go forward. And of course, in the Isle of Man Constitution, if you want to be nominated as Chief Minister and you hold a position like the President or the Speaker, you have to resign that position before you can be nominated.
So you've got to resign first. Yeah.
So you have to resign first. So I had to resign as Speaker, which I did in the morning, so that I could be nominated in Tynwald for the position of Chief Minister.
And that's not knowing if you're going to be elected.
And that's not knowing if you're going to be elected. I mean, you have a feel, but you're not sure. Yeah. Nothing's ever sure in politics. That's the joy of politics. And so, you know, when I did get the position, that was fine. And I got a big vote in Tynwald. I was the only member who was nominated, but Tynwald still had to vote to approve whether or not they would recommend me to be appointed as the Chief Minister of the Isle of Man. And, you know, I got on with the job then. I can remember my first time when I walked in the office of the Chief Minister and I sat at the table, sat at my desk, I should say, and I just sat there and I, maybe only for a couple of minutes, just sat there looking into space thinking, what do I do now? And, you know, it's like any new job, really. And I thought, well, suppose I just got to get on with it. And that's what I did. And I have to say, I had 5 fantastic years as Chief Minister. A lot of pressure, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of things we had to deal with, but that's the job. And one of the things I really enjoyed doing was leading, developing policies, moving forward, trying to make the Isle of Man more successful and dealing with lots of pressure from the UK. We were having lots of hassles from the UK over VAT, the health service and all that. And we were battling away on that. And in the island, sometimes people don't necessarily see what goes on behind the scenes. And I mean, it was fine. I had a good relationship with the ministers in the UK, but I did on occasions have clear conflict with them because my role was to represent the Isle of Man. And interestingly, I was the first member from the Isle of Man to sit before a UK Select Committee in the Houses of Parliament, which was over a bank failure. And we were explaining, you know, what had gone on. And of course, the Isle of Man has a protection scheme for depositors. And there were people trying to get it that the UK basically was pushers into a corner. And I was asked, you know, don't you think the UK government should be providing you with funds to deal with this? And my answer was absolutely straightforward. No, we're not part of the UK. It's our responsibility and we will deal with it. When I finished that, a lot of the depositors went mad outside and had a real ding-dong with me because they didn't want that. They wanted the UK just to pay them money. As it worked out, as far as I know, I think all of them got their money back anyway. So, you know, the Isle of Man, as a responsible jurisdiction, had a job to do. But the great thing was what I was able to achieve within the island, and that was to encourage ministers, encourage departments to work together, to get things done, to look forward, to develop policies that would improve the quality of life of the people of the Isle of Man, because that was my aim.
We'll have a lot more about this during the week. Let's have our second choice of music, sir.
Yeah, well, my second choice of music, which is interesting, because when I was a child living in Castletown, one of the things I used to do a lot was sit at the quay in Castletown watching the boats unload. So one song, one tune that comes to me and I like very much is Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding. And I think it's a great song from 1968. And it's just relaxing. You can imagine sitting on a dock, listening to the tide come in.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change. Everything things the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on a dock of a bay, wasting time. Midweek
on MyTunes with my guest all this week. He was Chief Minister 2006 to 2011, Tony Brown, OBE. It's great to have you here, sir.
Great to be here, Mark. Great to be here.
You know, in the Isle of Man, a lot of people say, well, it's so different politically from across in Westminster, primarily because although we do have political parties, you've got Liberal Vanin and some elements of a Manx Labour Party, primarily it's independent.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you see that as a strength?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important in a small nation like this. In my time in politics, I went to quite a number of Commonwealth Parliamentary Association conferences where you meet parliamentarians from across the world. And one of the things you find out is where you've got small countries, small islands like the Isle of Man, some with populations slightly bigger, and they have party politics. In fact, what you have is that the parliamentary system and the government is generally controlled by one party for decades because of the strength of the party. And you end up with it only going in one direction. The beauty about independence is it can zigzag through life and hopefully, depending on the members, hopefully secure the island, meet the needs of the people of the Isle of Man and improve their quality of life and create opportunities. Now, you don't necessarily find that in smaller nations across the world because they are too split between one party and the other. And here, we don't have that. And I've never been a fan of party politics. The day it happens is when the people of the Isle of Man want it to happen. Hopefully, for their benefit, it won't happen. But what that does is put a greater responsibility on the parliamentarians, i.e. the MHKs especially, to protect our constitution and to protect what they do. In other words, don't allow the government to become too powerful. Very easy in legislation to give powers away and then you can't get them back. So it's very, very important you're always on your guard. And, you know, you put safeguards in that are unique to the Isle of Man. In other words, you reflect the structure, how Tynwald works, how the Keys works, how the Legislative Council works, and how that then corresponds with government and the powers the Chief Minister and ministers are given. And ultimately, the responsibility of the MHKs is to protect the people of the Isle of Man, not protect the government.
If your government is not totally accountable to the people, then you've got a problem, haven't you?
Well, you have, and especially so where in the Isle of Man, of course, the Chief Minister doesn't have a public mandate. He has a public mandate from his constituents to represent them, but not to be the leader of the government. And take my position, when I got elected to the House of Keys before I retired, the last time before I retired, and I'd been re-elected for 5 consecutive elections and 2 of them without opposition. When you were in that position, you become Chief Minister. You've only got a mandate from Tynwald. You have to then bring the people with you. The Isle of Man government by its nature and the Isle of Man Parliament by its nature, and it's nothing we should apologise for, is a structure of compromise. It works out how to make it work for the Isle of Man and how it should work best for the people of the Isle of Man. And yes, we have to live in the real world, and yes, we have to be actively getting business into the Isle of Man, but ultimately we have to protect our people. That's what it's about.
Do you think there should be electoral reform in the case that maybe the Chief Minister should be elected by more than just the MHKs?
Well, I think it's a big mistake. They're going to a system where he'll only be elected by the MHKs, which will happen at the next election. I mean,
because the MLCs will no longer have a voice, is that right?
Absolutely. And what you have to remember is what they're actually doing is downgrading the role of the Chief Minister. The Chief Minister at the moment is elected by the Parliament of the Isle of Man. Throughout the world, it's the parliaments that deal with this. Our Chief Minister in the future, who will be elected by a majority of the House of Keys members, will only be elected by a branch of our Parliament. And outside the Isle of Man, that will be recognised. They will see it, that he has not got the backing of the Parliament of the Isle of Man. I think it's a really bad step. The system we have isn't perfect, but no system around the world is perfect. Look at America at the moment. Mm. But, I mean, what we have is a system that works. And, honestly, the Chief Minister should be elected by Tynwald whilst he is not elected by a public mandate. And he can't be elected by a public mandate on his own. In other words, you have an election for the Chief Minister because he or she would become too powerful.
Mm. Let's have today's choice of music.
Well, I think it's worth saying, interesting times. The 60s were very interesting times. The world went through real turmoil of the hippies and all the way through to, the 70s. The 1960s were really, really a good time to grow up as a teenager. Basically, what happened with the Moody Blues is I went to a friend's house. He had one of the Moody Blues LPs on. I listened to it. It didn't really do a lot for me. And I thought, it's a bit different. You know how you get music, you like it, but it's not quite sure. And I said, can I borrow that LP? Because I want to have a listen to it. And I took it home. I had a listen to it. And I really got into it. And I thought, yeah, I like this. And I first remember getting it. I got it in a record shop in Victoria Street in Douglas. And I bought Days of Future Past. That was my first LP. And then after that, I bought the sequence of them all till I had the whole set. And I've also now got the whole set on CDs. And I just think the Moody Blues music is so different. It's relaxing. It's intriguing. Why do people like Night in White Satin? Because it was a popular record that consistently was played and still is. And people are used to it. Well, lots of the other Moody Blues music is just as good, but you've got to get used to it and it takes time. And I'm a big fan of Moody Blues because of it.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore. 'Cause I love you. Some hand in hand, just what I'm going through, they can understand. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot defend. Just what you want to be, you will be in the end. And I love you. I've written
Thursday's My Tunes, last one of the week with my fabulous guest, Tony Brown, OBE, Chief Minister, 2006 to 2011. Great to have you here.
Yeah, great to be back, Mark.
And some lovely music going on as well. Before we go back to the Chief Minister period, tell me about being an electrician and trying to help people out. I mean, electricity, it's not something to be messed with by the amateur, is it?
Well, it's not. And I mean, when you go back to when I was first an apprentice, which is 1965, and then up through to the 70s, people still were a bit strange about electricity. It's not like it is today. And I can remember, you know, we used to often get called from older people and they'd say the bulb had gone in their light. And were they still paying for electric because the bulb didn't work?
Oh, wow.
Because people weren't as clear as today. And different things like that, you know. The biggest thing always happening was people were buying these new cookers with automatic timers on to set the oven, and they were always getting them on automatic, taking them off manual, and then their oven wouldn't work and they couldn't cook their dinner. And of course, now people just know, oh, it's the automatic. In those days, people saying, why isn't it working? You know, yeah. Automatic washing machines were just coming out in the sort of late 60s. And they were massive and they were heavy. It used to take four of us to lift a Hoover automatic because there was a big lump of concrete in it and it was horrendous. Automatic cleaning cookers by Creeder, massive big things. Again, four men to carry it because they were so big. Because technology hadn't advanced enough to do what they can do today. So the world was changing. Lots of things were changing. But people were still doing their own thing a lot, and yes, there were dangers.
I always remember your store, because if ever I thought, well, where am I going to get that? If it was electrical, if it was a part of bulb, your place. Simple. Down to Tony's place, and you'd have it. Well, if you didn't have it, you'd get it.
Absolutely.
And that was
absolutely
the best thing. Yeah. No, I haven't got one of those, Mark, but I'll get it for you in a couple of days. Bang.
Absolutely. And we took that very seriously, Rachel and I, because we'd both worked for the Isle of Man Electricity Board, and I'd been with them for 15 years or so. And one of the things when we set up the shop was we wanted to make sure that when people couldn't get something, we'd get it, and we'd say we'd get it, it would be here two days later or whatever it was. And that to us was really, really important. So we kept a variety of stuff and we said, we'll get you it, and we did. And I think that's important.
I think it's really important. It's all very well staying shop local. If you don't get that support from your retailer, you're not going to hang around. You're going to go to something off-island. But, but if the guy says, or the woman says, I'll have it for you Tuesday, and it's there, no problem at all.
And in most cases, you know, even now, it's easy for shops to do that. I mean, it's not maybe as easy as they'd like, but it's still easy. All the shops, most of them anyway, in that sort of trade, would use the internet to order goods from across, get them locally. There's wholesalers on the Isle of Man. You can't get everything. We never did. We got a lot from across. But the point is, in competing with the internet, I'm sorry, you have to have the stuff in the stock. And I know that's difficult because it's your money that's outlaid. But, you know, you've got the choice. Somebody comes into your shop and says, have you got such and such? No. Well, can you get it? I don't know. I'll have to have a look. The next thing is they just go home and order it on Amazon or whoever, and they've got it in 2 days. Yeah. Well, the island has to compete with that. And to do it, you've got to be on the ball, basically. Retailing is hard. Retailing is very difficult. Nobody makes a fortune in retailing. Even the big stores don't make a fortune. They struggle to make it work. But the smaller ones, especially the small ones in the Isle of Man, critical to them is their rent, their rates, and the price of the goods they can buy off the wholesaler. If those three aren't right, they struggle very hard to compete.
Now then, we mentioned the Icelandic Bank. I remember it very, very well, all that went on with that. That just seemed to happen almost overnight, literally, when it went bang. Was that the biggest challenge for you during your time, or were there others?
Yeah, I would say that was the biggest one. I mean, we had emergency meetings of the Council of Ministers to try and deal with it, because, of course, it came out of the blue to us just as much as it did to the depositors. And we spent hours and hours late into the night trying to deal with the issues. What could we do? How could we get on? Talking with the banks that were here. And then, of course, I went with a team to Iceland to meet the people from the Icelandic Bank, because, of course, they had a parental guarantee in their documentation, which, of course, they never honoured. Why didn't they honour it? Because basically Iceland was bankrupt at that time, and they didn't have the resources to do it. But we went there to say, look, what are you going to do about this? you know, we have a deposit scheme, you still need to reimburse us. Anyway, everything flowed on from that, and eventually it all went well, as far as I know, because I'd moved on from then. But I think it all finished off 2012, 2013, and as far as I know, all the depositors were paid the full amount of their money.
Just before we play our final piece of music, is there any message you today would like to give to the current administration about going forward?
Well, I mean, all any administration can do, and I have to be careful because, you know, I was there once,
yes,
is really be committed to the Isle of Man. You've got to care about the Isle of Man and be committed to it. That means when you're a politician, government or not, you have to work hard and be totally committed to making sure the Isle of Man is secure. Nobody owes us a living. We're in a big world. We're a small, small component of that big world. And to be blunt, even the UK, nobody cares about us. The only people who care about us are us. And the people who are there to look after our interests, first and foremost, are the government of the Isle of Man and the Parliament of the Isle of Man. And, you know, it's not about them. It's about us, the Isle of Man. And you've got to put that first and foremost in your forethoughts when you're developing what you're going to do, how you're going to secure the future. And, you know, even in my time, things we were doing, we knew wouldn't impact maybe for 10 or 15 years. That's what politics is. It's not about being popular. You have to be popular to get elected, but there's a real job to do as well, and that's really important.
Tony Brown, OBE, thank you so much. Let's have our last piece of music. What a way to finish.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking about the turmoil in the world and especially, you know, sadly what's going on in America and who knows what will happen in November. And the one that came to my mind, one of my favourite tracks, was Give Peace a Chance, which was by John Lennon and his band, the Yoko Ono Band. And I just think it says everything. And I think the world should give peace a chance. Everybody should say, and I get frustrated as well, by the way, everybody should say, let's just relax. Let's start enjoying life more. We've got to work hard, but let's enjoy it while we do it. And across the world, I think we need a bit of that.
Tony Brown, thank you.
Thank you. Great, Mark.
Two, one, two, three, four. Yeah.
wonderful to hear that again. Give peace a chance. The musical choice of my guest on this particular My Tune selection, Tony Brown. Keep coming back to manxradio.com for more podcasts of all shapes and sizes. I'm Mark Tiley, Monday to Friday, 9:30 to 12, in the morning, if you please, with Shaw Alaman.